Okay, so we already discussed the basics of meiosis here in slide 8. We're comparing meiosis with mitosis, which we've already really done, but this is a nice summary. One huge difference, of course, is that mitosis involves only one division event, whereas mitosis involves two division events. That's why mitosis results in two cells at the end. Meiosis results in four. Another huge difference is that mitosis does not affect the ploidy. Whatever the ploidy is of the original cell entering mitosis, that's going to be the same ploidy of the resulting two cells. They will be genetically identical to each other and to the original cell. Whereas in meiosis, the whole point of meiosis is to reduce the ploidy. So it doesn't make any sense for a haploid cell to enter meiosis. It has to be a diploid cell so that its ploidy can be reduced to haploid. And recall that that happens in meiosis one, specifically anaphase. So let's compare metaphase of the two like we did last time. Metaphase of mitosis involves individual replicated chromosomes lining up. If there are homologous pairs, which there would be for a diploid cell like this one, then they don't care where each other are. So we don't even really use the word homologous pairs for mitosis. Whereas in metaphase one of meiosis, the homologous pairs find each other, or the two homologs find each other to make the homologous pair, also called a tetrad. They synapse and cross over, and so crossing over, we talked about last time, produces brand new sequences of DNA. So does independent assortment, how they line up at metaphase. But when the separation in anaphase 1 occurs, it's not separating sister chromatids. Instead, it's separating homologs from each other. That's why it results in a reduction of ploidy, because one of the cells is going to get just one of each of the chromosomes. The other cell is going to get just one of each chromosome as well. So they're already haploid at that point. The problem is these chromosomes are still replicated. That's why you need meiosis II operating just like mitosis to separate the chromatids from each other. And the resulting four cells each have just one of each chromosome. They're still haploid, but they have just enough DNA for one cell rather than two. They're unreplicated. Well, here's a word summary in slide 9. I'm not going to read that to you, but it's a good thing to review when you study. In slide 10, we see a pictorial representation of how independent assortment leads to new genetic combinations. For some reason, this book has this slide before the next one, but just recall that independent assortment is not the first thing to happen. The next slide is about crossing over, which actually happens first. But anyway, this is about independent assortment. And if you have an N of 1, then independent assortment doesn't really matter, right? There's only... Even though there's two ways you can line up, they're the same thing, really, because one of those two cells is going to get the red one, one of them is going to get the blue one. So it's only really, it only makes new genetic combinations for N's of two or more, which most species have. And here you have an N of 2. Do you recognize this as an N of 2, by the way? Why is it an N of 2? Two types of what?
Of like chromosome, what, like longish one? And one like
that's right. And it's diploid, right? It's because you have two of each of those two types. So you can see that for an N of 2, there are two possible ways to assort. One way is just randomly to have both blues go to one cell and both reds go to the other. The only other possibility is for each of the two cells to get a red one and a blue one. But every time you add an additional type of chromosome, in other words, when N goes up, then there's two possibilities for however many of the possibilities there were for the previous N's. And therefore, mathematically, in general, I think I mentioned this last time, the number of possible ways to independently assort is equal to 2 to the n minus 1 power. And that's why for humans it would be 2 to the 22nd power, which is 4 million or 8 million roughly, whatever it is. That's number of ways you can line up just for independent assortment, which is only part of the genetic combination or recombination. Okay, then in slide 11, even though this is after what we just looked at, this happens before. This is crossing over. You can see a better picture. Not only do the homologs come together, synapse, to form the tetrad, and not only do they cross over, but when they cross over at a point called a chiasma, they swap the downstream genetic information with each other downstream of the chiasma. And so notice that even though we call these are still replicated chromosomes, and we call the chromatids sister chromatids still, they are no longer identical sister chromatids, right? Because one of them has crossed over with the other, with the non-sister chromatid from the other homolog. These are brand new sequences of DNA that have never existed before, these partly blue and partly red ones. So that is really the biggest, the richest source of new possible DNA sequences crossing over, because there's just so many ways it can happen. Oh, that is the end of the slide, the chapter, so that's a short recording.